The Metal AI Podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Felix Beecher, and this is the Medical AI Podcast, a 30-minute thrill ride of big ideas. We talk to a range of top guests, from industry innovators to scientists to philosophers. This is brought to you by Informatech, where I'm the head of healthcare technology. Medical ultrasound is now old technology. Its first use was in 1941 for detecting brain tumors. However, it is also a technology with a great future. Ultrasound can image pretty much any part of the body. It is safe, cheap, and easy to use, and it is also a very active area for innovation. And AI is a very big part of that evolution. And with me to discuss current innovations in ultrasound imaging is Joran Hummel, who is the president of us2.ai. Joran, I'm absolutely delighted to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Good. So could you just introduce yourself, Joran?
Yeah, sure. So Joran Hummel, like you said, I'm born and bred in the Netherlands, still live there in the northern part of the Netherlands, and spent the most part of my career, so approximately 23 years in echocardiography, where I was affiliated to the University Medical Center in Groningen. I did a lot of echocardiography there in my time, and did a PhD on heart failure and echocardiographic detection of subtle cardiac damage. So that's kind of where my love for research and innovation came from. All up until the part that where I became a co-founder of this company called us2AI in 2017.
Now, I should say, by the way, that us2AI, the website address is us2.ai, right? Just in case people are trying all the different permutations of how that could be spelt out. Okay, good. So could you explain a little about the company, us2AI?
Yeah, so us2AI is basically trying to automate the fight against heart disease, and that's a relatively broad term, but specifically what we're trying to do is democratize echo through automation of measurements and further on the line through disease detection.
Okay, so let's go back a couple of steps. Could you explain what echocardiography is in general?
Yeah, so echocardiography is a diagnostic tool which is based on ultrasound. So we know this in many fields in healthcare. It's used for screening pregnant women to see the unborn child. It's done on the heart. It's done on the brain, like you said. So working with ultrasound beams, we send those beams out and they reflect on a structure within the body and are received back, and those frequencies of sound are actually translated into a black and white image. So a very, like you said, easy tool, an inexpensive tool also, but most of all a very safe tool and one of the most commonly used diagnostic tools in healthcare.
So could you talk a little bit more about how echocardiology is used in clinical practice? What kind of conditions is it used to assess, for example?
In cardiology, so in the heart departments of the hospital, it's mainly used to image and get a view of what the heart looks like. So before you can even detect a disease of the heart muscle or the heart valves, you must first get that image. And the first step in echocardiography is actually measure the thickness of the heart muscle and the width of the chambers and the length of the chambers, which we can recalculate into volumes, but mostly also a visual assessment of how is the heart moving. Is it contracting well enough? Are the valves actually not leaking? All those kinds of things, that's what we use echocardiography for.
Echocardiography, I think, it's changing, right? In the sense that previously ultrasound analysis of the heart was kind of qualitative and required a lot of expertise on the part of the diagnostician. And we're moving to a situation where that kind of analysis can be done in a more quantitative way and in a more automatic way. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. This was actually one of the reasons why I got out of echocardiography. Can you imagine that 2/3 of all echocardiographers, but sonographers in general, are actually scanning in pain? Because when they acquire all those echo images, they have really weird positions of their body to actually get that best image. So this is a common thing, the work-related musculoskeletal issues in sonographers. I was one of those people who actually got all the neck aches and the shoulder pains and simply couldn't do it anymore for this amount of time. In addition to those complaints, there's actually a lot of manual labor intensive work. Can you imagine if you get an echo? So in a general echo, you acquire approximately like somewhere between 30 and 80 images, and you only want one measurement on that specific image, right? So what your basic work is searching for the best image, then searching for that one frame in a 60 frame video to do one measurement. And yeah, you do this for sometimes 10 times a day, 20 times a day. And within each echo, maybe 250 clicks. So when I got out of the university hospital, I once had this evening where I started counting the clicks of every echo that I did. And that accumulated to 250 clicks for one echo. So in my whole career, that ended up in 3.25 million clicks in my whole career, simply to do only analyze echoes. And that, thinking about that, it's too much. We have so many good techniques these days that the amount of clicks, you know, we can decrease dramatically.
Very interesting. Now, echocardiography can not only measure physiological features of the heart, it can also measure blood flow. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes.
And how is that used in clinical practice, that information as well?
Yeah, so echocardiography is always a nice interplay between cardiomechanics. So how does the heart actually work, the working of the muscle, and that working of that muscle that actually is the driving force between or to the hemodynamics, so how the blood flows and how the heart actually works. So you can imagine that if you have a left heart chamber that contracts really well, your cardiac output, so the amount of blood that flows through your body, is approximately 6 liters per minute. But if that chamber has a lesser function, so for example, due to an infarction or due to some other disease, it's the amount of blood going through your body is way less than that 6 liters a minute. Hence, has an influence on your whole well feeling and well being actually. So the interplay, and that was always the thing I thought was the most interesting, is the connection between how well does that heart function, how well does that muscle function, versus what is the result of it not functioning that well, and how do we see that in patients? So those kinds of things result into signs and symptoms, for example, which is one of the big markers for heart failure.
Now, let's say that somebody presents to you with heart disease, which of course is one of the, if not the biggest killer in the West. What kind of changes would you expect to see from an echocardiogram in terms of anatomical changes in the heart and blood flow?
Yeah, so let's focus that a little bit on heart failure, because heart failure is indeed one of the biggest killers globally, and still on the rise. And that heart failure, people come in with signs and symptoms. So they present themselves with shortness of breath, edema in the legs, and overall not well-being. And what we see in those patients, there's three categories. So one is actually that pump function, so that contractile function of the left heart chamber is not good enough. Hence, like I said, if it doesn't contract well, you can't keep up that cardiac output, so that's 6 liters per minute. Hence, you get that signs and symptoms. Another very interesting one is heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So that's a heart failure, but with a normal contraction of that left heart chamber. And that is based on the relaxation of that heart being being impaired. So, interesting thing, if you have a thicker muscle, the relaxation of that muscle is slower, and it is basically stiffer. I always compare it to the elastics that we have. If I have a very small elastic band, I can pull it, and it doesn't take that much energy to pull that. But if I have a real thick elastic band, I need to actually exercise power to stretch it, right? So the filling of the heart also has to done with those signs and symptoms. And that's one of the things that research in cardiology is now also really focusing on.
Okay, so look, I think you've given a fantastic summary there of echocardiography. Let's talk a little bit about your product. Can you explain how, where you are with that and what it does?
Yes. So what we already said is that in one echo, we sometimes do 250 clicks and to measure thicknesses, lengths, width, and all that things. And what our application actually does is have a computer recognize first, what image am I looking at? And secondly, do all those basic measurements that I would normally do in 250 clicks, fully automate that. So by the time that we have sent that echo through the application, it takes approximately 2 to 3 minutes for it to do a full echo analysis. Hence, for me as an echo specialist, the only thing I then have to do is simply check all that data and see, you know, am I in agreement with what the application does? So it takes away many clicks. It decreases the time used for that analysis. Hence, we can make hospitals way more efficient, which is, of course, an important thing because, you know, one of the issues in healthcare at this point are the huge backlogs that exist.
So what you've described there then is about efficiency and saving time, which is obviously extremely important. But are there advantages also in terms of accuracy of these kind of measurements?
Yeah, absolutely. It has always kind of fumbled me that echocardiography is a subjective diagnostic tool, right? So to give you an example, if I have one image, I search for a specific frame and I do a measurement. But if you give me that exact same image a day after, my measurement will not be the same. Even for me, so the intra-observer variability is there, let alone if you have a colleague of mine or somebody, a specialist in a whole different geography, do that same measurement and compare it to mine, there will be variability.
Yeah.
So it is not an exact science, echocardiography. And that actually means that the accuracy, which we're talking about, is variable, right? So the point is, if I have a certain measurement, for example, I have a septal thickness of 12 millimeters, then it is abnormal. But if I have it at 11, then it's normal. So that variability actually dictates if we think of a structure of being normal or abnormal. And if you then think of longitudinal follow-up, of echoes or of heart disease, you want to take away that variability of the human, right? And this is where the computer has a huge advantage. But the computer sounds like a very smart thing, but in all actuality, it's kind of a dumb thing. Why? Because it simply does what it does, and it does it the same way every time. Yeah. So I give that specific image to the computer. It takes the same frames, it does the same measurements, put the points on the same pixels, and I give it again, it does the same thing. So we get rid of that human variability with the computers, and that's very important in many fields in healthcare.
Now, in principle, an AI system or any kind of system could be highly consistent, but highly consistently bad, right?
Equally,
humans could be somewhat variable, but still better. So how do you measure accuracy head-to-head, the kind of the human, well, the, not humans, but the standard methodology versus AI-boosted methodology?
Yeah, this is a very good point. So one of the things that we needed to do for our FDA clearance and our CE marking, basically the regulations to get to market, was a really interesting trial we had to run. So to get validated, the authorities actually told us, well, you do so much automation, we're afraid that humans will get, you know, will sit back and relax and let the computer do everything. But we want them to still keep an eye on what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Humans are basically lazy.
Yeah. Right?
And so they said, well, you have to send 600 echoes to an imaging core lab. And this was the imaging core lab at Brigham and Women's in Boston. Very renowned imaging core lab with highly trained people. And they said, so these three humans, they have to do one read. All three of them have to do one read, and they will come up with the variability. So the variability that we just discussed. And your automated measurement should be showing less variability to each of those three humans as the three humans have among themselves. Mm-hmm. This is a statistic called the individual bioequivalence coefficient, a very fancy statistical term to say it's interchangeable with human variability. And our measurements pass that. So, you know, it has the same or lower variability than those humans had. Hence, it was deemed interchangeable. So this is again one of the things that shows that we take away that variability, but also that we are interchangeable with humans. This also led to a very nice publication in Nature Communications, which is a very well esteemed journal to publish in.
Now, normally AI systems, when they're at least clinical AI systems, when they're published in the scientific literature, they tend to report, or at least want to report, that their systems are superior to humans in some kind of head-to-head comparison. Now, what you're reporting here is equivalence, essentially. So was it your ambition to produce something that was better than humans at these kind of...
Good question. So reporting that you're better than humans can, for prediction of disease, that's obviously important, and that's definitely something where AI can come in. But what we started up with was the notion that if we go to a doctor and we give him a black box, so-called black box approach, simply going to a physician and saying, well, the probability is 99% that this patient has heart failure, that doctor will, you know, immediately say, okay, how does it work?
Yeah.
I want to see how it works. And that's where prediction is one of the more difficult things in your go-to-market strategy. So the route we've actually taken is say, okay, we have a black box approach to gathering all that data, normal data that is used in normal, regular clinical practice. And from there on out, we say, okay, these are the data. And from there on, we can do prediction. right? So we take those doctors by the hand and say, this is your normal clinical workflow. You can see all the measurements. It's all there for you to agree with or disagree with or change. And from there on, we're taking the next step to prediction, which is, you know, it's hard to explain that AI part, the black box part to people.
Yeah.
You first have to gain trust.
Okay, well, let's talk about black box. I mean, I have to say, I think humans are, if not black boxes, somewhat gray boxes. Most of the time, are they not? But let's ignoring that. It's fascinating because it's such a kind of controversial, it will always be controversial, at least for a while yet. Now, could you explain a little bit about the AI component to your system in simple terms?
Yeah, so the gray box analogy is really a great one, because what we actually try to do, and this is one of the challenges in my daily life working at us too at this point, is actually opening up that gray box. Mm-hmm. I need that computer to do all the steps that I would do in a normal clinical setting. Simple thing. I recognize from which direction I took a certain image with my echo. This is something in my clinical practice, I just recognize it and, you know, do my thing on it. But I need that computer to actually do that same step. It needs to find the best image. It needs to find the best frame with the, you know, best depiction of every structure in that heart. And that's, you know, that's what makes my life very interesting at that point. How can I teach that computer, aka I have now a young child that I need to teach everything, and it will learn and will get better. And so that's where the AI comes in. That's kind of the interesting thing to me.
So could you give us some examples of the kind of successes you have had as a business?
Yeah, definitely. So I've already mentioned our Nature Communications paper, mm-hmm. which was a great success for us. The other thing, and this is always an interesting thing, which kind of bridges the clinical applicability of such an algorithm. Again, we're talking about an more or less black box approach. And what we've seen in these techniques is, you know, somebody develops a certain neural network, so mm-hmm. a bunch of filters that a computer uses to come to a certain conclusion, and then they put it somewhere else in another center or in another data set, and things simply do not work. And one of the greatest achievements that we did, and we have also done a publication on that in Lancet Digital Health, was our network, so our workflow that we built. We've built that in first instance in Asia, in Singapore. And then we said, well, it needs to generalize well all over the world. So we took that data and we took that network and tested it on data in Taiwan. We tested it on data in Canada, and we tested it on a data set in the US. And we saw consistently that our algorithm that we built came to the good results. It did the same thing in all different patients, from all different machines, from all different walks of life. So that was, well, something I was really happy about, and basically everyone in the company, because that showed that algorithm could actually be implemented everywhere in the world. Hence, if you can do that, you can open up echo and echo analysis to a way broader public, to in the hands of the less experienced users, for example.
Yeah. Well, that brings us very neatly onto one of my favorite subjects, which is the democratization of medical imaging. So could you talk a little bit about how your kind of system furthers the notion of democratization?
We have a couple of problems in echo or in healthcare in general. One of which is the backlogs, right? So if we can now make use this application and this software to do the analysis better and faster, we can get that backlog out. One of the other advantages is if we can do a very high grade analysis of an echo, maybe we do not need to train people this well for the analysis of an echo. So this means we can put the echo analysis into the hands of novices.
Yeah.
And you know, you can combine that automated analysis with a little bit of scan assisting, for example, on hardware, which is something that is now also available on the market. And this is an interesting thing, right? So when I started training, it took me about a year to get trained to acquire the normal standardized images mm-hmm. within Echo. But now there are actually AI-guided systems that tell you where to put your probe on the thorax, how to maneuver that probe, so how to rotate it or angulate it to get the best image. So if you now have that hardware with the scan assist and you have the automated analysis, you can actually go out into the community, for example, and screen at GPs.
Yeah.
Have nurses screen. And this is one of the focus we have currently going on is doing trials and proving that concept.
Now, I can imagine that in general, what you could call the radiological establishment in the West might be opposed to this kind of notion because they might be concerned and legitimately concerned that it could lower standards in some way. And then on the other hand, I can imagine that in less developed countries where healthcare provision is very poor, this might represent a pretty significant improvement on what the status quo is. So there are kind of funny dynamics with this. I mean, can you comment on that?
Yeah, this is absolutely true. So for the health deprived regions, this is really an awesome thing, right? You can go out and have nurses do a simple screening. It doesn't have to be the full comprehensive echo that we do in all the academic centers where we look at the real nitty gritty stuff in echocardiography, but simple do a screening. And say, well, that pump function, so that contraction of that left chamber is normal or it isn't normal.
Yeah.
It is a thick-walled chamber, yes or no. I see a little bit change in the hemodynamics. These are the basic things that we already automate. So for those regions, it's really an outcome. And then if you talk about the more advanced centers already, these are actually the centers that suffer under this great mm-hmm. backlog of patients. And in the end, you know, there is some kind of fear of AI. And that has all to do with mostly it being black box and poorly explained. So the knowledge about AI is you know, still limited in many people.
Yeah. Okay, so you've talked about fear of AI. Would you describe that as one of the key challenges that you as a business currently face?
Yes. You know, fear sounds a little bit, you know, maybe exaggerated, but it's mostly not knowing about AI.
Yeah.
Which to me is very surprising because AI is already everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
I have my iPhone, and when I pull it up to my face, it says "Hello, you're on," and opens things up. That's AI. It's
well, it could just be a really friendly phone, you know.
could be. But still, it opens up things simply because it, you know, it recognizes my face. I've tried it to put it in front of my dog. It doesn't work. And my kids, who resemble me greatly, still doesn't work. So there is some good things in that. But it is in so many things. You know, my wife, she actually dictates a grocery or a shopping list for me when I go to the grocery store. She tells the telephone what to write on that grocery list for me, and it works. And also, this is also one of the things of AI, right?
Sure. Okay. Well, could you talk about what you see as the limitations of your AI systems and how you think that might change in the near future?
Yeah. So what I already described is that it does all the basic measurements. And it kind of takes back to what we just said, all the nitty gritty stuff of Echo, you know, which is actually the stuff I really like, but that's still a step too far for AI. Mm-hmm. So what we tend to say is the smaller the problem within an Echo, the larger the data set you need to train an algorithm. And there are many things which are not so common. Hence, the data sets are not readily available.
Yeah.
A simple thing, somebody can have like an endocarditis, which comes into Echo with a really small, sometimes a 1 millimeter small pixelation on a valve. Mm-hmm. For me, as a human, that's already hard to identify by eye. So having a computer identify that is you know, a bigger challenge.
Sure.
So what we have done is already, you know, automate all the bases, hopefully for all those specialists to create more time for them to actually look at that nitty-gritty things. So it will hopefully also increase all the quality of those echoes that's done.
Okay, great. Last question, Jure, and I think you've given really great, succinct answers. Last question is, what is your favorite current example of medical AI? Firstly, nothing to do with your own product, and secondly, nothing to do with your wife giving you shopping lists.
Well, two things come to mind, and one of the things that I was, I knew this already, and I know this is going to happen, but I saw a robotic arm, which actually was able to acquire Echo images. So simple thing: a patient lies down on a table, and a robotic arm was trained on images to go to the right position on the thorax and acquire that specific view for an Echo. This was you know, such a great eye opener to me that I said,
wow,
a computer is actually doing this, what I have trained for many, many, many years. And sometimes to my own big frustration, I couldn't get that image. And that robotic arm with the AI intelligence on it, it was able to get those images.
That's so fascinating. And is that commercially available, that kind of system, already?
Not yet. That's a full autonomic robot arm. There are actually a couple of them on the market where, and this leans a little bit to scan assist, but where you from a distance can actually maneuver and adjust that arm a little bit, and that is already available if I'm correct.
Wonderful. Well, Jure, it has been a fascinating tour of one of my favorite subjects, which is ultrasound, and so I'm very grateful to you for coming on. So thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Excellent. Well, all the best with us two AI. I'm sure it's going to be a great success.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. See ya.
Thank you for listening. I'm Felix Beecher. Ping me on LinkedIn for more information on Omdia's services in healthcare technology. See you next time.